pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two begins right now. Text line, if you want to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106. This is troubling. Trump on boots on the ground in Iran. Why would I go in? I guess that means that he's not looking to go into Iran. Let's hope that that is the case. Let's pray that that's not the case. We've got a Trump news conference. It's more rhetoric from Trump about the ceasefire going to hit them hard tonight. So tonight, Iran's about to be underway here. Just not a, and he's in, and Trump's in Turkey right now. So, and then oil prices continue to be on the rise, but they've stabilized. They shot up initially, and this is why. I think this is everything. I think the price of oil, you know, whatever Trump does to Iran, happens. I think it's the consequences of it that are everything. That what we feel domestically. Look, and I said this with Austin in the last segment. If Republicans lose Congress, the country is going to be totally different. It's going to be very, very different. And we're going to have endless impeachments, endless controversy. Nothing's going to get passed. It's going to be terrible. So what's the biggest evil? Or what's the biggest, I don't know, misguided is evil when you talk about Democrats. But what's the biggest threat? This left-wing ideology governing America are the threat that maybe Iran has a nuclear weapon, maybe they do, that could be used against us or Israel, and the economic calamity that would fall out from that. They say, I had somebody call me, an elected official, local elected official, call me, wanted to tell me, look, you think this is bad now? If you see a nuke come out of Iran, you're going to be talking $500 a barrel of oil. They just won't go anywhere. But is that a realistic thing? What is the cost-benefit analysis here? Because the cost-benefit analysis that I'm evaluating, okay, the threat, keeping the strait open, the nuclear threat, which they say was evaluated, but I'm not so sure it is. But if you got to be proactive here, you're going to go after this, and this is going to cause more global strife, the economic impact. And what follows the economic impact is a political impact. What will that political impact be? It's going to be great for Democrats. What's the worst evil here? What's the biggest fear? What's the biggest threat to this country? There's no right answer here. We don't know what the answer is. Other news, Graham Plattner still continues to be a thing. Maybe that helps Republicans. They hang this albatross around the neck of Democrats and make them own this guy, make them own the Democrat socialist. But here's the problem. To some people, socialism won't sound all that bad when they are paying high gas prices. Socialism, well, maybe we just need to have the government come in and impose its will on oil producers and on gasoline. We don't want that either. Like I said, we got to evaluate these consequences. Is this worth it? If there were no economic fallout and this were something that you could do that wasn't going to impact the global markets, okay. I think people would be, all right, sounds reasonable enough. But this is the world we live in, this global economy. And that's just, I know they talk about it on the financial channels, but is your average Fox News viewer really considering it and along these lines? Your average Republican? I don't think so. The news, Mitch McConnell, a lot of you are interested in this, and I don't know what to believe. I mean, you know, the rumors are that he's brain dead, but I hear that's not true. Those are... And it is also weird that Elaine Chao is in China while his health is deteriorating, his wife. Scott Jennings was on CNN, said he had a phone call with Mitch McConnell. Now, Scott Jennings, if you're watching CNN, he's sort of the House conservative there at CNN, and he does a really good job. But he used to be a McConnell aide. Well, he's a Bush aide, too, but he worked for McConnell. He's a Kentucky guy. And like I said, he does a real good job of being the conservative when the deck's stacked against him and showing just how intellectually flimsy some of the left-wing orthodoxies are. But says McConnell, I guess, was capable of having a phone call with him. Let's roll through some text here. I've been putting these off for a while. Named texture, Congress and Senate need to nuke the filibuster, get stuff done, and then reinstate the filibuster. Don't think it's going to work that way. I think once you break the glass, it's broken forever. Ultra Runner. In dealing with Iran's Islamic fundamentalist dictators, the most effective language is personal, not bridges, not buildings, not oil. You must leverage the value they place on their own lives and the lives of people they value. This, of course, is not easy when dealing with a religious fundamentalist who value the life quite differently. We do this in America. We tend to operate on the assumptions on the conventional wisdom of American values or Christian values. Well, not as much Christian anymore. And the value of life. We have a different rationale. I mean, this is a totally alien to us culture in the Middle East. It is the best example of it was when we thought we could invade Iraq and turn it into the Commonwealth of Iraq or whatever, and have it operate with a democracy that works in with our cultural system, but it's not going to work with that culture. So when you look at Iran, there are some who are like seeing these Western values and they want to aspire to be that way. But there are others who I don't think are there. I mean, I just, you know, that they've done this this way for thousands and thousands of years. And this is what they're going to believe. So you're right, Ultra Runner. That is not... We're dealing with people that we can't assume that they think like us. They have a different set of assumptions, a different religion, a different belief system, different values. What they value, what they put as a priority is way different than what we do. I think that's the mistake sometimes. Unnamed texter. How is Social Security an entitlement when I paid into it my entire life? I think it's an entitlement in the sense that it is the way it is categorized. Trump only has concepts of a plan. It's good to hear him expose cost of living. The reality is you need two incomes to make it. Billy, no one is winning the war in Iran. The whole world is losing. The preemptive strike was stupid, and it makes the U.S. president look like a dummy. Well, I, I just disagree with, if we're looking at scoreboard of casualties and armaments, and that we have a, I'm not for this. Okay. I'm not for what Trump is doing here, but he did it. And now we got to figure out a way to get it to end. It was a mistake. Unless they do something that we don't know about the nuclear capabilities here. Maybe they did. All we can do is give them the benefit of the doubt. But at face value, it appears to have been a mistake. Do you want socialism raining down on America, or do you want to live with the possibility Iran could use a nuclear weapon against one of our allies? That's the question. And we got to do that cost-benefit analysis, and there's a lot of unknowns. But you don't give the president the benefit of the doubt here, Billy. You got a little tinge of, or maybe you got more than you're letting on here, of Trump derangement syndrome. You didn't vote for him, I assume, Billy. But on the scoreboard, objectively, you could look and say, okay, the U.S. has lost this much, or the U.S. coalition of U.S. and Israel have lost this much, and Iran has lost this much. Who is, if you're just looking at the scoreboard, the U.S. is winning. Iran is weaker. We wiped out half of its leadership, and we will continue to do so, I think. Michael, neither should be supported. The Iran situation is going to split us away from nearly all of our other allies. It's basically going to leave us isolated with a nation of 9 million. The problem with many of those cheering on the war in Iran is the simplistic in their logic. They only think in either or aspect. Us, that they call isolationist or anti-Semitic, realize both is also an option. Both Israel and Iran are evil nation states, and neither should be supported by the United States. Butter knife. Jeff, so you're looking at the Iran war with the American values thinking we're winning. They don't care about being bombed back to the Stone Ages. Every time they go towards a nuclear weapon, we bomb them. That will be the future. But now they're thinking they have power over the straits. Well, when I say you think of Iran from a using American values, I'm talking about when you're dealing with the Iranians. I'm not talking about the scoreboard. They think they're winning because why? They stood up to the great Satan at a significant cost to their regime and a significant cost to their military. And that's a victory. But when you're assessing winners and losers in war, that's not how this works. A named texter, how many halves of leadership does Iran have? I don't know. 251-343-0106. Got about 3 or 4 more texts. We'll get to on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Glory, glory.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Next segment, Joy Clark from News Talk 93.1 will be with us, so please stay tuned for that. Ricardo writes, I am totally cool with smoking Iran, especially with no boots on the ground on the subject of socialism taking over because of Iran and gas. I really don't see anything stopping the socialism train when they control the media and the universities. That may be true, but it's not going to win in like North Dakota or Nebraska or you know, places where in our electoral college system, that's a hard sell. And this is going to be the problem for Democrats. It's not even going to win over the entirety of the Democratic Party. And they're going to fight. And you still have a Democratic Party establishment, Ricardo, because socialism is just something they pay lip service to. They want the power for whatever reason. Maybe it's a cronyism thing or something like that. I don't know. Would you say Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were socialist? Or were they just more kind of old school Democratic Party bosses who accept the indiscretions, if you will, of capitalism because it benefits them? It's the way the world works. And they can pay. It's sort of like in Alabama where they can do a lot of things on social policy. But, you know, are they really conservative? The same question is sitting out there in the Democratic Party. Are they really progressive? Sure, they could be for gay marriage and abortion on demand, but are they really for seizing wealth? Are they really going to do that? They may pay, like I say, lip service to it. And then there are some that really all out believe it, okay? But that's just it. I think that there is that's going to be the fight in the Democratic Party. And that's going to be the impediment for now for the next maybe 10, 15, 20 years of socialism really actually becoming a thing in America. That's going to be a big impediment. Then it becomes where it's socialism versus non-socialism. And then maybe we are headed in that. But to me, you can have these candidates on the ballot. You can have these three candidates from New York State. You can have these candidates, two candidates from Colorado or whatever. But they're going to be backbenchers. They're going to be relegated by party leadership to be in the back of the room. Brandon writes, I think maybe Trump did the ceasefire to get prices down and see how quickly they came down and cleared the backlog in the Strait. Now he can strike for a couple more weeks and then stop, bring the prices down before the midterms. It also gave us time to reload and gather intel. That's an interesting theory. Market will catch up to this. Maybe that's why the market's not out of control right now. We're not looking at $100 a barrel yet. 75 is still a little high. You get 90, you get worried. You get to 100, you're in trouble. The sweet spot's about $67 a barrel is what I've been told. Butter and I were basically negotiating and working out deals with a terrorist group. What could go wrong? You're right. What I would like to know is, what is the objective? What is, now, this is what we hear from the administration. Like, what will it take for this to stop? Ricky, we're going to allow Ricky because I haven't had a Ricky in a while. And the Word of God says all governments work for Satan, and all of us are slaves to our sin nature because we are all born sinners and nuke our fate guys turn or burn. And then finally, Mike writes, what has Trump done with regards to the Middle East that earned him the benefit of the doubt? Or heck, you would go back to the first presidency when the administration was put to the test with COVID and he failed too. He's not proven that he picks decent advisors in order to earn the benefit of the doubt. I get Trump the benefit of the doubt on this because he has access to stuff that we don't, Mike. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
this cowboy's hat.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Still to come about an hour from now, Bradley J from Breitbart News. So stick around for that. In the meantime, you want to interact with the program, the text line is 251-343-0106. Joining us now on the line, we do this on Wednesdays. I always appreciate his time from News Talk 93.1's News and Views. Joey Clark is with us. Joey, how are you?
Doing all right. How you doing?
Doing well. Well, we're back at it here. I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but it's a little disappointing. We're back in this sort of war footing. And, I'm only disappointed. I know it's going to have an impact politically.
Yeah, I'm worried that the political impact's going to happen. But, I mean, I don't know what else the president could do. If he just walks away from this, it creates an even bigger problem down the line, not just for him, but for anybody else who comes after him. And perhaps they do have the capabilities to just, my hope is they don't go full bore into destroying infrastructure, because that could create whole new monsters and problems. But if the plan is to continue to just kill the leadership that won't cooperate, I mean, I don't know if you've seen some of the clips from NATO where Trump was saying, we go into a room and we agree on all this stuff, and they go out and do a press conference like it never happened. These people are cuckoo. They're cuckoo. And he's done. And I think if that's who you're dealing with, well, we can go back to the last argument of Kings, which is dropping bombs on your head.
What is, if we do start just taking out infrastructure, what do you think is the net result?
Ooh, that's hard to predict. That's why that would make me nervous, is it would be very hard to predict what sort of monster or maybe a good outcome you would get out of that failed state. Because you're talking about a country of 91 million people. It would cause revolution, but it would be cause a sort of revolution that's like desperate in the streets, like cutting people's heads off thing, as much like French Revolution stuff. And so out of that, do you actually end up with somebody even more radical and nihilistic? Or do you actually end up with sound governance? And then you have the economic aspect of it. What does that do to the Strait of Hormuz? Like, the Iranians seem to be like these types where the more you back them into the corner, the crazier they get and almost crazy suicidal they get. So I don't know. When you take out all that infrastructure, I think you would create a lot more enemies than you would win people over.
Because, I mean, if you just have this failed nation state and it stays contained, and I don't know, that may be a pipe dream, but is it fighting among themselves better than fighting against us?
That's one theory. It only buys you so much time, and I think you might end up creating an even worse monster you got to go back and slay. I don't know. I think the plan is going to be to continue to take out top leadership, to continue to decapitate them at the top and till they cry uncle.
It doesn't appear that's going to happen. You've taken out like the top 10 and they don't cry uncle. They just reload.
Well, take out more of them. Let's try it again.
if I'm trying to extricate myself from the situation, what does success look like? And clearly, ideally it would be them going on their merry way and rebuilding their country and doing something productive on the global stage. That's not how they work. That's not what they're going to do. So it's just going to be this perpetual bombing, whack-a-mole thing. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, that's probably what it's going to be. I don't know. I think the Strait of Hormuz is more of a Trump card, no pun intended, than everybody had said it for years. But I think Trump was up against a wall where if the blockade and what the Iranians were doing on their part to block things had continued, it wouldn't have been $150 a barrel for oil. It would have been $300 a barrel. And it would have probably sent the world in spiraling into a depression. And so that's a heck of a Trump card. And Trump doesn't want that. He doesn't want depression for this country or the whole world. That creates whole new problems. So I don't know. It's a delicate balance. And I think Trump is right to say, I don't care about regime change. I just care about the nuclear weapon. That's a good line and a good goal for success. But you can't go too far with it, because a failed state could very well block the Strait of Hormuz more than anything else, too. It might end up where you see U.S. and maybe other willing partners taking a lot of that area, a lot of that land, taking those islands and controlling them.
Yeah, I think that Americans aren't going to tolerate a Vietnam or Afghanistan perpetual back and forth. I mean, at some point, you're going to get a Democrat peacenik, somebody who's just not interested in any of this, and they're going to walk away from it. And then you're going to have the outcome that you're laying out here. That's probably not going to be great. I think we're a little short-sighted here sometimes.
I agree. We're short-sighted. And if we could zoom out, I've been singing the song of Ron Paul and the non-interventionist and anti-war folks for most of my life. And I really do. I think Trump agrees with this. I think just the amount of killing, and nobody should be cheerful. And sometimes you get that sense. Some people are kind of cheerful about the war and the mayhem being unleashed. But if you zoom out, what keeps happening with our foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, is presidents run on peace and they end up in war. So I could see that happening. You know, it happened with Bush and ended up with war. It happened with Obama. It happened with Trump. Biden's a whole other, he was dead and in office anyway. But I think that could happen this time around, where the Democrats gain a lot of seats politically, running on essentially peace, and we don't want to get out all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, you've got yourself back in a situation. Because I don't know. No matter who we vote for, as the Ron Paul folks say, we always get John McCain, it seems.
Well, and this is my worry, and we could talk about what's right or wrong with Iran, but the American people aren't going to evaluate that. They're going to see what impacts their day-to-day lives, and they're going to go to the gas pump, and if they're paying more for gas, they're not going to care about why, how, who, any justifications, any validity to what is going on here. They're going to vote against it. And is it what's the worst case scenario here? Having this threat, this unknown threat of Iran, or having domestic policy guided by socialist Democrats?
Ooh, I would rather choose the unknown threat of Iran. I don't think the socialist Democrats will make a lot of hay out of this and get gains out of this if they can, but as I've told you in past shows, I don't think they're as strong as they think they are. They're strong in their blue enclaves. They're not as strong in.
They're strong in the Democratic Party. Because I say this all the time. I think the true person who celebrates being a Democrat, who wears it on a name tag, who wants you to know they believe in this socialism nonsense. And that's where the energy is. Now, they may not have the numbers, but most Democrat voters, I feel like, are kind of about politics. But the ones who really pick the candidates, the ones who run the party, they're the true believers. They are going to have control of, around 50% of the government at some point. And we can't, we're going to set ourselves up for that with some of this foreign policy stuff.
No, I think you're right. I just think down the road it's going to be more somebody like a John Ossoff who will do socialism light, but it'll be more, it'll be probably couched in the language of civil rights and these sorts of things like they've been doing for a while. I don't know. Trump's just in a tough spot, and it's kind of hard to, this is the problem of starting these things in the first place. Especially that New York Times article, that deep dive in the Situation Room where the Israelis gave this whole briefing. And here's how especially the regime change part, which apparently the CIA, everybody in the room told Trump their regime change pitch is nonsense. But it's kind of one of these warnings, be careful what you break. This is not a very rational thought, but it's just from watching Trump for a decade. Don't count the guy out. He sometimes usually figures it out and pulls his butt out of the fire. I guess you could say COVID and him losing an election, well, though it was stolen, Jeff, was a big mess up. But I don't know. There's something about this guy. Maybe he manifests it with his positive speech. He tends to figure things out and is actually thinking a few steps ahead more than folks are suspecting.
Yeah, that's a hope there. But I know how elections go, and I know, just the fear here is, okay, you keep doing this, you don't get this under control, Yeah, $5 a gallon gas. People are going to, you're going to have a, it's going to be more, less about a Democrat shift and more about a Democrat wave. And that maybe it doesn't impact policy yet, but it sets up for the future. And I mean, do we want to live through endless impeachments? Do we want to live through just the all the rigors of an election cycle controlled by a bunch of left wing, you know, burn it all down types that would be, that would benefit from this scenario?
And down the road with presidential politics, this could be albatross around the neck of both Rubio and Vance.
Yeah, well, and then that's probably where we're going to have to like figure this out. Let me ask you this. How much do you think, honestly, Israel's playing a role in this? Like, because, you know, this is, I'm sure you hear this on your show, but a lot of people who are kind of sticking with Trump to some degree, but they're very down. They suspect that there's an Israeli influence here within the administration that's guiding this policy. And if that were eliminated, then we would go on our merry way. But I don't know. I give Trump the benefit of the doubt here, only that there may have been like a tangible evidence of a threat to either Israel or the homeland. Iran had these designs on doing something catastrophic and needed to act. So, you know, I guess he's due that benefit of the doubt, but there are people who say, well, no, this is something Israel's been looking at, you know, for decades.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think Israel's influence in the country, and I don't really think of it as like, you know, you go back to the Red Scare and the Soviet influence. I don't think of it as much as like this foreign thing that's controlling our government. I just don't like going there. I would rather, because, you know, I know a lot of Alabamians. I think there are a lot of Americans where Israel is one of their top causes. And it's been that way for a long, long time. And it's really coalesced more so as the Democrats have gone further left around the Republican Party and stuck around. So I think our foreign policy for the last 20 years in the Middle East it would be ridiculous to say it isn't shaped in large part by a relationship with Israel. And again, that's not the Israelis roping us into things. There's a lot of Americans roping us into things with that interest in mind. But then, you know, your other point, I think there is an actual, and you're seeing it, how the Iranians are behaving. I think there was an actual threat. You know, the case that Rubio often makes of they were building up conventional force levels to where they really could cause a problem for Europe, cause a problem for the rest of the Middle East. And I think what Trump and Vance were trying to do with this latest deal was solve both those problems, neuter Iran, denuclearize Iran, and then actually make Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and a lot of the other Gulf Arabs more equal partners in the region instead of Israel being the top dog. I think you saw some of the Israelis mad with the Vance deal and were going after Vance pretty viciously. So it was essentially them trying to rebuild a new Middle East with a coalition that's much more balanced with all the partners in the region. And the problem is the Iranians don't want to play ball right now. As Trump said, they're cuckoo. And so, you know, you're back to where you're at. But that seems to be the long way. Like the Gulf Arabs hated Obama's Iran nuclear deal. They really liked and were speaking up for what Vance was trying to push, because I think it did give them much more sway. And as you look at Trump and Turkey saying, I'm going to sell F-35s to the Turks and the Israelis, and Netanyahu said, don't sell the F-35s. You can see how this is slowly starting to, it's a just general rule of the Trump administration foreign policy. They're not going full hawk. They're not going full Ron Paul, but they're trying to essentially rebalance everything more to America's benefit. Will it work? Who the hell knows?
Well, yeah, because this will seems to be the problem. I mean, I think, like, for our sake of our domestic political discussion here, what is the end? Is it achievable? If I said, okay, President Trump, what does it take for you to end this? And he would say Strait of Hormuz and denuclearized Iran and, you know, stuff they're never going to agree to. And then you say the same thing to the Iranians, and they're going to want tolls on the Strait. They're going to want cash. They're going to want, I don't know, probably. It doesn't appear with the sides so disparate and separated, that big gulf, that you can get to a conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, as it stands right now, it doesn't seem that way. But again, I don't think we in the public, even some folks who are, say, more inside than you and I, Jeff, really know all the dynamics of what's going on right now in Iran. And especially, like, you have this big problem because they blew up two waves of leaders. Who's actually running things there in that country? Like, who's actually the general? So you got to wonder, you know, if you keep bombing them down, whittle it down, maybe there is actually a breaking point that we just hadn't hit it yet. And, but yeah, it's always, there's the publicity side of this stuff. But there's definitely, I don't know, behind the scenes element that's, there's too much complexity for me to sit here and go, this is exactly what the president needs to do. And, you know, for the last several months, I've been on this kick of, thank God I'm not in that chair. And I think everybody who criticizes for or against, should probably thank God as well that you're not the one having to make that decision the president's making.
Well, like in regards to Trump, I mean, there's no, like, there's no in between. He's either full bore, we're going to bomb the living daylights out of him, bomb Karg Island, they're going to feel it, the agreement's over. There's no, like, sugarcoating it with him. Or we got to have peace, it's going to be great, it's going to be fantastic. You know, like, and that sort of leadership style does present some challenges to getting to a conclusion.
Well, that's him on everything, right? And it always seems to be kind of somewhere in the middle. That's what he did in real estate. Like, it's this all or nothing show, and sometimes the show is literal bombs dropping. But then he tries to find the, you know, where he can make room for a deal. So, I don't know, you in the moment, like, I just think about all these, like, moments Trump has had. In the moment, it's like he's chaotic. This is crazy. And why is he saying this or that? Fat little rocket man will never have a nuclear weapon. And then all of a sudden you see, like, some, oh, here's a little bit of a breathing room. And we're going to go along. And you don't forget fully what you wanted, what he said that the U.S. is going to get. But it actually moves the ball in a certain direction. I don't know. I saw the news this morning, the clips coming out of NATO, and I thought, well, the ball's still bouncing. I didn't start to think doomsday. But your point about the political midterms, the political climate is, I think, spot on. I can't argue with that.
Joey, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
At the Joey Clark on X or Joey Clark Live on YouTube.
Y'all check that out. Joey, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
It won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone. Make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh so right. My Dixieland
life. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Dixieland Delight. So I told you, I took my 5-year-old on a trip over to 4th July. We went to the what do they call it, the Sand Mountain Potato Festival, the 4th of July. They always do it up there, but we go up there, eat breakfast with the Speaker of the House and some other state level officials. Become kind of a 4th of July thing we do every year. This year though, he made this observation about the amount. The Dixieland Delight. I didn't look, Alabama's from Fort Payne, but he kept hearing Dixieland Delight. And his daddy, why are they playing that song so much? I didn't really have a good answer for that other than, yeah, well, this is where that band that plays that song, this is where they are from. But it's just like you heard it during the parade a few times. We heard it played at the event. I think we may have heard it on the radio at least one time as well on the trip into Hanager, into DeKalb County. So kind of interesting observation. I guess wait till he goes to an Alabama football game and sits through the third quarter, end of third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter festivities that you get in Tuscaloosa at Bryant Denny Stadium. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. When I fit on.